When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Jones! Bowden!
He's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins!
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match!
Hello, welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket with me, Simon Hughes.
And me, Simon Mann.
Now, what are we going to talk about today? We're going to talk about, is there too much cricket in England? This debate surfaced when the PCA themselves conducted a survey of players, current players, and is there too much cricket going on? Is the schedule too much of a mishmash and puts too much pressure on players? We're going to discuss that. And later, with 3 weeks to go until the World T20 tournament in the Caribbean and the USA, with the most number of teams ever playing in a world tournament, 20, we're going to talk about a team or a country that want to be part of it and claim to have founded cricket as well. That comes up a bit later. But first, Simon, actually, this is a debate which Joe Root, I suppose, has kind of made very public, because he's gone on record as saying he agrees with the PCA survey, which has come up with a couple of stats. 81% of players feel there are physical concerns about the congested schedule. They have physical concerns. And 76% are worried about unsafe travel, travelling late at night after games to another game the following day. Actually, you've got an example of the demands on a current team this year, your own county, Gloucestershire.
Well, the example is that on the 20th of June that they play against Glamorgan in Cardiff, a T20 match. The next day, they play against Somerset in Bristol. Then they have a one-day break, and then they start a four-day match against Yorkshire at Scarborough. So, really intense schedule there. So, what's that? 6 days cricket in 7 days, I make that. Which is, yeah, is pretty tough, pretty intense. And, you know, okay, Cardiff to Bristol's not that much. But then you've got to go to Scarborough with a one-day break. You know, it's that evening driving, I suppose, you know, after games. People, you know, you can travel by coach, whatever, but then you've got to get home afterwards as well. You know, if you're tired, you're 1-2 in the morning, whatever. But, Yoz, I mean, just some context here. I mean, when you were playing, you were doing this sort of thing week in, week out, weren't you?
Well, we were. I mean, I suppose it's dangerous to compare eras because, you know, things are different now. And certainly cricket is more intense and there's more preparation time as well, which I suppose factors in. And I suppose, you know, more pressure on players with social media and streams covering every single game. There's no hiding places. But I just looked at my season, for instance, in 1986, when in August in 1986, Middlesex played 8 3-day games. So that's a total of 24 days cricket. And 3 Sunday League games as well, which were often at separate venues. So 27 days out of 31, August 1986. You can check it out if you don't believe me. And actually on one occasion in that period, 20th of August, Wednesday, we played at Headingley, Yorkshire, 3-day game. And for some reason, the bowlers started to go up the ladder during that game, and I ended up bowling virtually from one end for the whole day. I bowled 34 overs in a day.
What a bonanza for the batsman.
Well, exactly, a bonanza for the batsman. By some miracle, I got 4 wickets. I did go for a few runs as well, but I sort of kept it going from one end, the Kirksall Lane end. Luckily, I was running downhill for all that time. Anyway, at the end of that match, 20th of August, 22nd of August, we had to drive on the Friday night, which was bank holiday weekend in August, to Hove for a match starting on the Saturday. And we got there at 2 a.m. and basically had 4 hours sleep and then straight to the ground. So, you know, it was something we did. And I mean, we complained about it then and no one listened. Maybe people are listening about it now.
Mm. How much did you complain about it then? Did you say this is ridiculous? Or was it just sort of grumbling, oh, we got Headingley today and then got bloody Hove tomorrow?
I mean,
Hove tomorrow.
I mean, you know, we did grumble about it, but nothing was really done. And I don't think in a way then the Professional Cricketers Association had the same power and the same influence maybe as it does now. And obviously this is all connected to the mental health of players, which is a big talking point, and the Professional Cricketers Trust, which is part of the PCA, the charity that we support with our World's Best Cricket Club, you know, they are inundated with requests from players for mental health support. So clearly is an issue there. I mean, that's why I guess it is dangerous to compare eras, because, you know, we did get on with it. And I think cricket in those days was less, you know, sort of, there was less pressure on you. I mean, obviously, you know, individually you had to perform. I think 1986 was the last year of my contract, so I had to make sure I was performing and I had to do the 34 overs in a day to get the next contract. And, you know, you all wanted to get to stay up the table. Of course, there was no promotional relegation then. So if you were sort of 10th in the table, there was no real pressure. You wanted to win. You wanted to perform well for a pride reason, etc. But there was no kind of, right, we've got to get to 7th position to avoid relegation kind of thing. So I think there was less pressure on players then.
Do you remember any stories, you know, of players, oh, I'd nearly dropped asleep at the wheel or anything like that?
Yeah,
or
plenty. Oh, God, yeah. All the time. And, you know, people that took a break in a motorway service station because they couldn't keep going. There's plenty of that kind of thing. But again, it was part of the job. And we very rarely travel by coach, which I think teams sometimes do now. I remember seeing the Lancashire coach arriving at Hampshire this year for their first 4-day game of the season. So, you know, that's sensible. But we shared cars, 3-2-3 to a car. Someone had to drive. Funnily enough, the other day, actually, I was with Joel Garner as part of the Visit Barbados, who were kindly sponsoring our podcast this month. Joel Garner, the great West Indian fast bowler, was over in England, and I had dinner with him. And he was remembering how he got given a sponsored car when he played for Somerset, and got in the car with Viv Richards and one other player. And immediately they got in the car, they fell asleep. He was hoping for a good conversation driving up the motorway, and they were both asleep. So he had to concentrate very hard. Wayne Daniel, my former colleague at Middlesex, another Bayesian fast bowler, he was given a sponsored car to drive around the country. He pulled out of the Grace Gates, saw the traffic going either way at St John's Wood Road, and reversed straight back in because he'd only been used to driving in Barbados. And he handed me his sponsored car, which is a bonus, because it means I could cruise around the country with a blazoned name on the side of the car. But yeah, you did get tired, and you had to kind of at times make sure you had lots of coffee to stay awake.
I think one of the points we must emphasise is we're not saying, oh, the players today have never had it so good, because look what it was like in the old days. You know, you played all those matches in August. I mean, it seems to me, when you look back at when you played, that the schedule was ridiculous, wasn't it? And I think eventually people came to realise that, didn't they? That they thought it's absurd playing all these games back to back. This, you know, this idea of playing, you know, a 7-day week. You might have a 7-day week, might you play two championship matches, 2 3-day championship matches in a week, and you play a John Player League game on the Sunday, as you say, often at a different venue, not every time at a different venue, but sometimes at a different venue. And there, you know, there have been absurd stories of, you know, travelling halfway across the country to play that John Player League match, which is a 40-over competition on a Sunday, which got good crowds and players enjoyed playing in it, a bit like the Blast now. So I think what we're not saying is that, you know, they've never had it so good. It is worth definitely listening to the players, although I noticed I couldn't help be drawn to a stat from Dan Kingdom on X this week, who said that actually there are fewer days county cricket now than at any time since 1949. So I'll just do that again. There are fewer days county cricket now than at any time since 1949. I had a look back at the 1949 season, and there were 26 county championship matches over 3 days. There were no one-day competitions back in 1949. So 26 times 3 equals 78. And that is that's how much county cricket there is now, if you play every day. And of course you don't, and they probably didn't play every day back in 1949 either. So you have 14 four-day championship matches, 56 days, 14 blast games. Okay, you might play one or two more if you qualify. And then the one-day cup, likewise. So you might play one or two more matches if you do well as a team. But you know, your basic limit is 78 days county cricket. And of course, you won't play them all because of the weather. Same point about 1949. And then the following season, 1950, they went up to 28 championship matches. So there was a bit more county cricket in 1950. And actually, those 2 years, the titles were shared. Middlesex and Yorkshire tied in 1949, and the championship was also shared the following year as well. The other just quirk, just a little caveat, just a little aside, I noticed from 1949 is that you actually got the point structure there. You got 4 points for a first innings lead in a match you either lost or drawn, or you drew, sorry. So, you know, no bonus points for number of runs and number of wickets taken. There was that kind of Sheffield Shield thing about first innings points. Anyway, that was a little aside, but that was back to 1949. So actually, the players are not playing more cricket. And there was a high point, 2010-11, when you could play 92 to 96 days of top-level cricket. So there's actually less cricket now. So do you think it's, you talked about intensity, is it also as well that many of the top players, perhaps, you know, many of the sort of upper 60 players in the country are actually playing a lot more cricket overseas now than they ever did before? I know you would go abroad and play, you know, you play in South Africa, you might play club cricket in Australia, whatever. There's a bit of that. You played in Sri Lanka. But, you know, there are a lot of players going abroad and playing all these T20 tournaments now. So perhaps the schedule it feels cluttered, and it probably feels more intense because of the games are a bit more high profile, possibly.
Well, I think that's part of it. I don't think that the playing abroad thing is a particular feature, really. Because, you know, we all played abroad, and I played Currie Cup one winter, which is the first-class competition in South Africa. And there are players playing, obviously, in T20 around the world now, but they're, you know, fairly short tournaments, and they're only playing a 20-over game. Obviously, the 20-over cricket is very intense. Every ball is an event, if you like, but nevertheless, it is only 20-over cricket. They don't start until 7 o'clock at night, usually, so they've got the whole day off before that to do whatever they need. I think the main problem, you use the word cluttered there, and I think actually that is the problem with the English schedule. And we've heard this from players we've had on our podcast, like Joe Leach from Worcestershire, for instance, saying that 7 first-class matches, or even 8 first-class matches in some counties' cases, in the first 2 months. So April and May, you've got 8 four-day games, or 7 four-day games. That is intense, and it finishes off quite a few fast bowlers, or especially the overseas fast bowlers are not used to that intensity. So it's the compression of the first-class calendar, if you like, into those first 2 months to enable the August month to be cleared for the 100. That's one of the problems. And then obviously a lot of first-class cricket at the end of the season as well, 6 games from the end of August through September. So, you know, that's one problem, this sort of logjam of matches beginning and end of the season, which I think must feel very intense to the players, and with nothing much in the middle of the summer. And I think the other thing is they've tried to this year, using the Blast schedule, to do Thursdays to Sundays rather than Mondays, Tuesdays, or Tuesdays, Wednesdays as well. There are a lot of matches Thursday to Sunday, which means you play Thursday or a Friday and a Saturday or a Sunday. and there's less gaps between games, and you've got to travel from, you know, one part of the country to another as well. So it's that sort of congestion, the isolated bits of congestion, which are more of the problem. What's the solution? Well, to me, it is principally to put more first-class cricket in August. And that would be a eureka moment to a lot of members who are so adamant and outraged that there's no first-class cricket in August because of the 100. That, I think, would help a lot. It would just alleviate the pressure of those first 2 months, which feels like half the season's gone by the end of May. And also, the problem with it is, you know, as we've seen this year, you lose half the games to bad weather as well. So, you know, the county championship is very lopsided at the moment. But I wouldn't reduce the number of county championship games from 14 for the simple reason that if you do get bad weather, you lose several games. And then if you're only playing 10 games and three of those are ruined by weather, you're only playing seven games that count, which is just too few in my view.
How many do you need to make a credible championship? How many do you need to produce an England team? Because that's sort of...
I think 14 is a good number, actually. I know that players are finding that tough, but that's because so many of them are in the first 2 months of the season.
And one other thing worth saying, I refers back to the 1949 season. Back in the day, the season would start in early May and finish in early September. One thing we have done is we have actually extended the season. So there's actually over 6 months, it seems to me, actual pro rata, we are playing less cricket because the season's longer and there are, as we've just seen, compared to 1949, fewer days of cricket. But you're right, there's that intensity at times, isn't it, that's caused one of the problems. The other thing, it seems to me, in the game is that there are so many competing issues, and everyone's sort of pulling, you know, different aspects of the game pulling in different directions. The players, they probably want, and I mean, we probably all want it, less cricket, more money, and that's sort of kind of what's happening in a way. The counties, the big and small ones, they want to make money, so they don't want to move. The spectators, they want cricket when they want it. And of course, that means there's, you know, the problem with the 100, which brings us into TV, and they want their cricket when they want it. You know, the organisers of the 100, they, you know, they're very happy, to, presumably, to have it right sort of slap bang in that sort of July, August period. The 100 this year, 23rd of July to the 18th of August. So you've got these competing interests. It seems to me that everyone is, and it's one of the problems with cricket in this country is it seems everyone's sort of pulling against each other. There's not that ability to work together. It's very hard to find a consensus. That seems to me one of the big problems. And I don't know what the solution is to that problem, but it seems to me there are going to be a lot of people sort of put out. Well, players feel they're put out at the moment, don't they, by the schedule. You know, they're unhappy with the schedule. Small counties, you know, looking on at this 100 sell-off and thinking, how is that going to impact everything? Spectators doing the same thing. You know, this is going to have a huge impact on county cricket. It's also, you know, being played at a time when, you know, they'd rather perhaps be watching some county cricket, so, or championship cricket. So you've got this sort of tug of war going on in the game.
Yeah, and then you've got the IPL on the TV as well, just to sort of almost add to more kind of cricket content being available. There's something to watch every single day, isn't there? So it's difficult. And obviously, you know, some of the England players that you want to see taking part in county cricket are still involved in the IPL. So,
well, here's something, Yoz, as well. Here's something about intensity. I mean, the impact sub rule in the IPL, look how it's impacting Josh Butler, who had that injury a while back, and he is just being recently being played by the Rajasthan Royals as an impact sub, and it worked in one game because he didn't have to field and he came out and made 100. Another game he was out first ball, so his day's T20 cricket lasted one ball. I know that can happen in any form of cricket, can't it? You know, you might, if you're in a test match, you know, you bat first, you're out first ball, and you have to watch your teammates make hay for the rest of the day. I know that can happen, but it sort of feels odd, doesn't it, in a T20 match, which is sort of, you feel like totally involved throughout those 40 overs, that actually his day lasted only one ball.
It's that worst feeling, isn't it? And I felt so sorry for my son, actually, Billy, the other day. He's playing for Cambridge against the MCC, and he's in his final year at Cambridge, so he's really got to be studying for his final exams. And he gave up his whole day to play for Cambridge against the MCC. Didn't bowl because it was a bit damp, so they were bowling kind of slow medium most of the time. And then he got in number four and got bowled out for about fourth ball. So, you know, giving up 5 hours of his day, 6 hours of his day for no reward. It's a frustrating game, isn't it? It really challenges you.
Well, it's one of the cruelest games. I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's one of the cruelest games. Other sports, you know, rugby, football, whatever, you know, you're selected to play, you're out there, you're involved. You can make a mistake, but, you know, you can make up for it. Well, cricket, make a mistake as a batter, invariably, it's good night, isn't it? And you have to sit and watch everyone else.
Anyway, this debate will run and run. Let us know what you think, how we could solve these scheduling problems. If you email theanalystpodcast@gmail.com, or you can tweet us as well at theanalyst or at @cricket_man, @cricket_MANN. We'll obviously like to hear from you. This week, by the way, on the Virtual Cricket Club, worldsbestcc.com, we have Jason Holder as our guest. And we'll ask him these very questions, actually, exactly how he's finding playing the county schedule and how he manages to orientate his year around the various tournaments that are available, how he's feeling physically, I suppose, as well. So you can join us Thursday evening, 8 p.m, Jason Holder, worldsbestcc.com. Go onto that link and you can join us. We are raising money for the Professional Cricketers Trust, the charity I mentioned earlier, which is helping players, amongst other things, with their mental health issues. So it is a worthwhile cause. And after the break, we're going to hear from someone running cricket in a country that you don't normally associate with cricket.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, welcome back. Now, this weekend is an interesting anniversary. It's the 400th anniversary of the first ever allegedly recorded match, in England, played at Horsted Keynes in Sussex. In 1624, there was a match at that very venue, and a man died in the game. A fielder going for a catch was hit by the bat as the batsman tried to intercept it, and later he died. More on that story later in the week, actually. But that is the sort of claim, Sussex claim, that they are the sort of origins of cricket. Now, the man, the guest we have on today, has an alternative claim. An Englishman, originally from Devon, David Cook, but who is now secretary of Iceland Cricket. David, you're in Reykjavik, one of the countries trying to get membership of the associate list of cricket to be able to play in the tournaments like the World T20 we talked about starting next month. What's your claim? What's the Iceland claim to the origins of cricket then?
Well, Simon, first of all, thanks for having us on your podcast. Our claim is that cricket actually was invented several centuries before in Iceland. We have quite a lot of documentary evidence to that effect. It wasn't called cricket. In Old Norse, it was called knattleika, which means the ball game. And in the sagas, there are approximately 13 instances where the playing of this sport was documented. And it was very similar to cricket as we might recognize it. So players were divided into two teams. There was a bat, there was a ball, the bowler faced off against the batsman, and things unfolded much the same as you might see in modern day cricket, minus the laws. Now, the case that you just mentioned where cricket was potentially invented in Sussex and one person unfortunately died, This, unfortunately, was also a theme in the Icelandic sagas. In that first game, documented in Eyjólfs saga, 8 players were killed. So the ICC would have had an absolute field day with level 4 infringements that they'd be dishing out, unfortunately.
There'd be a lot of concussion checks and things, wouldn't there? So what happened and when was this?
So this was in... the first instance was documented in Eyjólfs saga in 911 Common Era, so in the early part of the 10th century, only about 40 years after Iceland was first settled. And then there are various reports and anecdotes of the sport Knattleika being played for around 120 years after that. Then we enter a sort of a dark period in Icelandic history where it seems that no cricket was played. And that continued up until World War II, when we were occupied by the British and they played a match.
So what's the current sort of state of Icelandic cricket? How many teams do you have? You know, what are your grounds like? What are your pitches like? What's your weather like?
So the weather is bad continually. It's windy, it's cold. And as you can imagine, Iceland is not an ideal place to play cricket, far from it. But we've just started our outdoor season just on Sunday. And temperatures yesterday were roughly 4 degrees. There was sleet. It's a bit better today. We have 2 matches this evening in this T10 event that we call the 60 ball shootout. And in that we have 5 clubs. So we have a club in Kopavogur, Reykjavik, Hafnarfjörður, Vesturbæjar and Garðabæjar. Don't worry if you can't pronounce them. And we have been growing the number of people playing cricket in Iceland. So there's about 130 to 140 male players now split within those 5 clubs. We also have the national team. From what we select the national team based on the best performing players from those 5 clubs. We aim to grow further. We aim to get to a minimum of 8 clubs, which is what we need for ICC associate membership. There's a lot of challenges. Pitches is obviously one challenge. You know, we play mostly on multi-purpose sports pitches in Iceland. So that is difficult. But there are other barriers as well to getting to that stage where we can say we're an ICC associate member.
I mean, you post some funny pictures on your Twitter account, your X account, Iceland Cricket, of sort of lava flows going on in the background. I love your ashes urn, which is from the volcanic ashes. You've got it there, have you? So that's your that's an ashes urn mounted on a piece of lava, is it?
Yeah, so the this is basaltic lava here. It's about 1,000 years old, and then we have a replica urn here that we insert into it, and stuffed inside here, the most important thing is ash from every one of our eruptions post 2000. So it's got real ash. We didn't have to burn any stumps. We actually got it from volcanoes. So it's authentic, unlike the fake ashes that have been circulated for 150 years or so.
Who competes for the volcanic ashes?
So this is our indoor tournament, and it's the same 5 clubs that I just mentioned. So we just completed that tournament last month.
So your outdoor cricket... there's been some funny pictures you've posted of, you know, players in ski kit and thick gloves and hats and so on. Is that the kind of de rigueur kit for playing cricket in Iceland?
Well, of course, I mean, we exaggerate a little bit for comic effect. But that picture that you mentioned, that was actually a picture that was taken about 22 years ago. When Henry Blofield came over to Iceland with a team of cricketers and they played on the glacier, which, as it turns out, is not actually much fun. But in reality, we do play in temperatures that are sometimes close to zero, with wind chill below zero. So you have to wrap up pretty well. It's like Durham on a bad day.
Yeah. Actually, I have a bit of experience of playing on in icy conditions because I've played a couple of games in St Moritz on the frozen lake in February, 20, 30 years ago. And you lay an artificial strip on the frozen lake and you can actually play a reasonable game. The trouble is, and I don't know if you find this happens in Iceland, but over time, the underneath the artificial strip, the ground freezes, but it freezes unevenly, so that the surface over the top then becomes quite dangerous. Mark Nicholas will have a great story to tell about the day he was facing the opening bowler from Switzerland, who was originally a Pakistani, who bowled a vicious lifter from just short of a length and clattered him on the head with no helmet. And there was blood everywhere, but luckily a lot of ice available as well to pack the bruise.
Yeah, we have a similar problem in Iceland with corrugated sort of pitches and bounce. You get every year we get several people ending up in hospital because of lifters.
Was that why? Do you think that's why there were the original deaths in these early games then?
No, that wasn't why. It was just pure violence. The first person to die in that match in Eyjafjallajökull was killed by an axe being driven through into the brain after some sort of dispute on play. And then after that, there was a further battle in which seven people were killed, you know, sword wounds and that kind of thing. So we don't advocate for this at all today. We know we've cleaned up our act quite considerably, to be honest. And there haven't been any such incidents for about 5 years.
I've heard there's some club cricket getting lively in England, especially in London. But yeah, this is obviously a completely different level. Who plays then, David? Who plays? Is it people who are sort of born and brought up in Iceland, or is it people like you who've gone to Iceland from other countries?
I mean, we want to get to the stage where it's people who are born native Icelanders, so to speak. At the moment, it's almost overwhelmingly the expat community, you know, people from the Commonwealth nations, England, Pakistan, Australia, South Africa, you name it. We're pretty much represented by the whole globe of major cricket playing nations. But our ambition is to obviously develop the Icelandic sort of players themselves. So this summer we're going into hopefully two or three schools to introduce cricket, and there's been quite a warm response to that, lots of people signing up. So we need to expand that. You know, if we're thinking about the longer term, 20, 30 years into the future, this is something we really need to do to make Iceland a cricket playing nation.
And of course, your claim is that you have more Twitter followers than the USA. In a cricketing sense, don't you?
This is mathematically verifiable. We do. We have 2.5 times the number of X followers as the USA, the host of the upcoming World Cup. So what does that prove? It doesn't really prove anything about the level of our cricket, but we have managed to achieve a certain level of popularity, notoriety, you might say, on X, just through a slightly different approach. Because we still remember, because we're all amateurs here in Iceland, we still treat the game as fun. We think it's about entertainment. We want to enjoy ourselves, and we want to spread that message. And there's a lot of cricket out there which is more serious, understandably, because there's billions of dollars flying around. But there's a lot of cricket at the same time that is maybe... We should just like to enjoy the fact that we can play cricket in Iceland, despite the weather, despite the disadvantages. And we try and express that through humour on X. And that has cultivated a certain...
Well, that would be a thing, wouldn't it? There's Americans playing, or there have been Americans playing in the IPL. There have been Nepalese, there have been Afghanistanis, of course, and other nations as well that you don't immediately identify with cricket. So that must be your target then. To get an Icelandic cricketer into the IPL?
We are open to offers. Our best players are pretty good. You know, when we played Switzerland in our first ODI, our middle order player, Dusan Bandara, he's got 134. He can play. And we have a couple of other people on a similar level. So, of course, a lot of people have never heard of these players. They don't know anything about them, but certainly if they received the level of coaching and training that a professional cricketer did, they could certainly be of that level and of interest to, say, an IPL team potentially.
One thing you mentioned earlier, you said that we, to become an associate member of the ICC, we have to have 8 teams. Is it as straightforward as that? That's what you have to do, and then you can apply? Or what other hoops do you have to leap through to become an associate member of the ICC?
Shocked at how strict it is. So obviously we're a very small nation in Iceland. We're 385,000 people. That's about the population of Leicester. And all the cricket that is played in Reykjavik, where there's 2/3 of the national population. So that's about the size of, let's say, Luton. It's not a very big place. And yet we have to have 8 men's teams, 8 women's teams, and 8 juniors teams all playing in multiple competitions and fixtures. So at the same time, China, with 1.4 billion people, has to meet the same criteria. So there's no scaling, and you cannot apply until you've met these minimum criteria. This has been the result of our meetings and negotiations with the ICC. So Iceland, other nations like Poland, like Lithuania, Latvia, I think maybe Serbia. There's a lot of nations that are seeking to become associate members of the ICC. But since they introduced the rules that have applied since 2018, it has become very hard to actually enter the system. So it kind of runs contrary to their mission of growing the game, where there are these barriers. And the biggest issue is that even though we have these ambitions and we want to tick all of the boxes regardless, we don't receive any funding from the ICC to support the advancement of that pursuit.
How can you access their funding? You've got to become a member of the ICC to get their funding, have you?
Yeah, so it's a classic chicken and egg situation. You have to become an associate member. You have to demonstrate that you have reached compliance in order for them to then reward you with a certain, not very much, a certain level of funding, which would enable you to participate in World Cup qualification and other tours and so on.
But you still play international fixtures. How do you arrange an international fixture against Switzerland, for example? You said you played against Switzerland a while back.
So it's difficult because we have a very limited budget. But in 2018, we were sponsored by the Reddit cricket community to go on that tour and play them. And then last year, we played a two-match series against Estonia in Tallinn, where we were sponsored by Startup Iceland. So we have had periodic sponsorship that has enabled us to participate in those kind of events. But we don't have that on a sustained basis. So we desperately need sort of a big sort of sponsorship or backer to actually enable us to reach ICC associate membership.
86 countries, official T20 ICC nations, playing in the T20 various levels of competition. The 86th team is Croatia, 85th Gambia, 82nd Mali, Samoa, Seychelles, Cameroon, Maldives, China, 78th. So it's a tough one, isn't it? But, well, we wish you luck for your campaign.
Thank you. And most of those, it is important to say, most of those were grandfathered in from the status of affiliate members to associate members in 2017, 2018. So they didn't necessarily have to meet the criteria, certainly immediately, that we have to now.
Just one final point from me, David. Is there any resistance to cricket in Iceland? Are people saying, well, you know, this is just ridiculous. You can't play cricket in Iceland. It's too cold. You know, you haven't got the conditions. It's not our natural sport in Iceland. Is there resistance, or is there general encouragement, or is there bemusement among native-born Icelanders?
I don't want to say there's resistance. I think bemusement is more sometimes the word. They don't understand what is going on. They don't get the rules. That goes for some of our players too, sometimes, unfortunately. But also, the word cricket in Iceland translates very poorly. So it's spelt with K's, because we don't have the letter C in Icelandic. They're often confused that word means croquet. So there's a lot of sort of basic misunderstandings like that. They think that when we say we're playing cricket, we're playing croquet, and they can't understand why the games go on for so long. And sometimes people end up in hospital with injuries. How is that possible in such a gentlemanly game? But, you know, gradually the word is spreading. You know, as we are becoming bigger, you know, we're obviously well known for football. But again, on social media, we have about three times the following of the National Football Association. So internationally, we're quite big. Locally, we are quite small in terms of the understanding, but it is gradually seeping through. And as we sort of undertake schools, education programs and things, hopefully the word will spread and we'll grow faster.
Okay, great. Well, thanks very much to David Cook, who's the secretary of Iceland Cricket. And if you want to follow them on X, they are at Iceland Cricket. And a lot of people do. And they do have a witty X account with lots of sort of references to cricket going on around the world. Now, this podcast is sponsored by Visit Barbados. I think that's one of the slight problems for Iceland cricket, isn't it? When I think about cricket, I think one of the great things about doing the job that I do and you do yours is that you do get a chance to go to the Caribbean or to South Africa or to Sri Lanka or Australia, i.e. somewhere where it's warm in the winter. Whereas, the idea of a cricket tour to Iceland isn't quite so enticing. So, if there is going to be a fixture in the future between England and Iceland, perhaps it might just be better if it were played, I don't know, in Spain or somewhere like that, on one of those sort of purpose-built or cricket areas that they have in countries like that. That's the only thing. They do feel as if they're slightly pushing the boulder uphill, but they did invent the game, Yoz. They did invent the game.
It's an amazing story, actually. I mean, fascinating. I've got to look into that in a bit more detail, in fact. And as I said, I'm going down to Sussex on Saturday to have a look at the ground where, allegedly, cricket was first played in England. That was allegedly about 500 years after the game seems to have first begun in Iceland. Anyway, as you say, thank you very much to David Cook. And again, if you have any thoughts about what we've been talking about today, both the future of associate cricket nations and also the scheduling of English cricket, email us at theanalystpodcast@gmail.com or, of course, using Twitter as well. Don't forget Storylines, our sister podcast, which is doing some great stuff at the moment, talking actually about the Darwin Project and the expansion of county cricket, or the re-emergence, I suppose, of county cricket for women. Interesting debate going on there. And also, again, just to remind you, Jason Holder is our guest in the Virtual Cricket Club on Thursday night at 8 p.m. You can join us by going to worldsbestcc.com. So we'll see you later in the week for another podcast. And we'll leave you with some music from the Icelandic singer Björk. And this is Human Behaviour with the appropriate line, "Be ready to be confused."
Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.